Will your church be one of the issues, etc. 300? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. We're looking for 300 congregations to pledge $1,000 to Issues, etc. in their budgets. To find out more about the Issues, etc. 300, click the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. You'll even find a one-page informational flyer. Please consider including Issues, etc. in your church's mission or advertising budget. The Issues, etc. 300.
It could be that at some earlier time, somewhere in the universe, a civilization evolved by probably some kind of Darwinian means to a very, very high level of technology and designed a form of life that they seeded onto perhaps this planet. Now, that is a possibility and intriguing.
Wait a second. Richard Dawkins thought intelligent design might be a legitimate pursuit?
And that designer could well be a higher intelligence from elsewhere in the universe. Well, but that higher intelligence would itself have had to have come about by some explicable or ultimately explicable process.
So Professor Dawkins was not against intelligent design, just certain types of designers, such as God.
That's Richard Dawkins, a famous new atheist, and Ben Stein from the film Expelled. Talking about intelligent design, it seems as though you've got to push back beyond even the designer and ask those kinds of questions. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc. Joining us for the next few minutes to talk about intelligent design, Dr. Jonathan Witt. He's co-author of the new book, Intelligent Design Uncensored. He's a research fellow at the Acton Institute in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Dr. Witt, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Good to be on.
When it comes to the origins and the place from which all this information around us came, a world full of information encoded in DNA, found all around us, especially in the life around us and in us, does it really come down to a choice between design and random chance?
I think there are two broad camps, Todd. And in one camp, you have those that say, you know, the life around us, the order of the universe, it's ultimately caused by, you know, blind chance, by physical forces, that there's no mind behind it, there's no creative intelligence behind it. In the other camp, you have a variety of people with a variety of different perspectives, but they're all united in this conviction that, no, there is a creative intelligence behind it. Christians, of course, would call that creative intelligence God.
I'm intrigued by just the simple numbers of the whole thing. If this is simply random chance, I think you call it in your book kind of a billiard ball view of the universe, just particles of matter randomly bumping into one another and eventually reaching the kind of order that we see on the grand scale and on the microscopic scale in the world around us. If you run the numbers, you say that the universe isn't big enough, it isn't fast enough, it isn't old enough to account for any of this if we simply look at the numbers objectively. What do you mean?
Yeah, you have a two-stage problem. First, to get something like the origin of life, they used to think that the first life, you know, a simple cell, was, as the term suggests, simple. We now know that even a very basic cell is extraordinarily sophisticated. It's more sophisticated than our automotive factories. And that's just the most basic self-reproducing cell. To get that first cell, you don't even get to use, you know, Darwin's natural selection mechanism because you don't have anything self-reproducing until you get the first cell. Well, the odds of getting that are just extraordinary. And when you actually run the numbers, the Earth isn't big enough. The universe isn't big enough. The second stage of the problem, even before you get that far, is, well, how do you get the laws and constants of physics and chemistry? We now know, and there's a lot of physicists, world-renowned physicists, Nobel laureates, who would concur with this. These laws and constants appear fine-tuned to an extraordinary degree. I mean, you would say, you know, one chance in and one to the 10, and then you just keep adding zeros and zeros and zeros until you got to numbers that are unimaginable. Unimaginably fine-tuned to allow for life, to allow for intelligent life. And you have a lot of physicists saying, you know what, the best explanation for that is some sort of creative intelligence. In biology, we get fewer people wanting to step forward because there's this, what you might call a Darwinist lobby that wants to punish anybody that steps out of line. Fortunately, there's some brave souls out there that have stepped out of line and are insisting that, no, the evidence is pointing toward design.
Doesn't biological evolution as a theory really, either Darwin or its proponents today, doesn't it really simply ignore all the prerequisites? They'll talk about a first cell or cellular life, and then they'll talk a lot about what must have happened after that to get where we are today. But I don't hear them talking very much at all about how they got to that place to begin with.
Right. Yeah, an honest neo-Darwinist, and Darwin was upfront about this. He said, for my theory of natural selection and random variation to work, first I need a self-reproducing cell. So my theory, he said, doesn't explain that. It presupposes that. In a letter, he suggested how maybe in some primordial soup it might have popped into being. But he didn't have any specifics, and at that time, they didn't know how extraordinarily complex a single cell was. So an honest Darwinist won't explain that. Now, a dishonest one will maybe try to paper that over, or they'll try to say it's not a big deal. They'll try to get you to think that a cell is simple, when of course we know that it's extraordinarily complex, as I said. So, yeah, there's a hole. Even if somebody were to say, you know what, I totally believe in neo-Darwinism, there's still a lot left to explain. You've got to get the origin of life. You have to get the origin of the universe. You have to get the fine-tuning of the laws and constants of physics and chemistry. So the evidence is mounting. That's one of the points you make in the book. The materialists, the billiard ball proponents will say, you know what, God is shrinking. You put God in the gaps of the things you can't explain, and those gaps are shrinking. You need to stop doing that. Well, we make the argument that actually the areas of the natural world that the materialist can even pretend to explain on purely materialistic ground is shrinking. They used to think they could explain a simple cell. Can't explain it anymore. They used to take for granted the existence of the universe. They said, well, the universe is eternal. Well, now we know it had an origin at some specific point in time. They took the laws and constants of physics for granted. Well, we can't take that for granted either. So the trend, we argue, is actually toward design, toward more and more evidence in science pointing clearly to a designer.
The two things that you spend a lot of time talking about in your book are information and specified complexity. Let's talk about information first. Why is that a linchpin for understanding design as a theory, but also for knocking holes, if you will, in the evolutionist model?
Well, information is useful for a couple of reasons. One, you can construct a very rigorous argument to design by talking about all the information that's in cells. The other strength of that is it's also very easy for even an ordinary person to grasp, because you can illustrate it by talking about information in computers. There you have order in the software. Software also requires hardware, and there's a direct parallel in the biological realm. Go back to this first simple cell. It requires an extraordinary amount of software. But for that software to function and reproduce, it also requires highly sophisticated hardware. And we don't have any, and we often the Darwinists will say, we're uniformitarians. We're not going to appeal to some bizarre thing like God. Well, the irony is that if you use Charles Lyell's uniformitarian method, you actually end up with design. Because Lyell said, you know what you need to do to reason like an historical scientist? You need to look for a type of cause that is active in the present that can explain whatever phenomena you're trying to explain. And we only have one type of cause in the present that produces complex information, and that is mind, a creative intelligence. So that you can actually make a uniformitarian argument to design based on the existence of all this information in the biological realm.
And when you talk about specified complexity, what are you saying?
Well, there's two parts of that. It's not enough for something to be complex, because if I went out and took a jar of pennies and threw them on my driveway, there would be a very complex pattern of heads and tails that if I tried to repeat that process, I would never get to a point where I could repeat the exact pattern. So it'd be very complex, right? But it wouldn't be specified. There wouldn't be anything interesting that would compel our attention. Now, on the other hand, I went outside and my kids were sitting there, and they had all these boxes of Scrabble boxes, and there were all these Scrabble pieces on the driveway. I might initially think, oh, this is just a mess, just complex. But then if I looked down and saw that they had spelled out, you know, the first act of a Shakespeare play, I would know that's not just complex, but that's specified complexity. That's information in the sense that we normally think of it. And I would also know that they hadn't just randomly thrown those pieces out there on the driveway. I'd know that they'd carefully ordered it.
Well, when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation on intelligent design. Dr. Jonathan Witt is our guest on this Wednesday afternoon, June the 2nd. He's research fellow at the Acton Institute in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and co-author of the new book, Intelligent Design Uncensored. When we come back, we'll continue on this vein of irreducible complexity, complexity that is there that cannot be explained by random chance, and the information that it contains. If you think about it, and if you look at the world, both big scale and small scale, you will find countless examples of this kind of complexity, not just complicated systems. The world is complicated, but specified with certain information embedded in it. Evidence of design. We'll be right back.
Are two new ways to stay connected to issues, etc. Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.
We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology, and we'd like to send you an Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker.
Often imitated, never equaled. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Resurrection Lutheran, Detroit, Michigan. Bethlehem Lutheran, Parma, Ohio. St. Paul's Lutheran, Lockport, Illinois. Faith Lutheran, Columbus, Indiana. Glory of Christ Lutheran, Plymouth, Minnesota. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Arnold, Missouri. Peace Lutheran, Sussex, Wisconsin. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Cedar Falls, Iowa. Zion Lutheran, Moberly, Missouri. And Elm Grove Lutheran, Elm Grove, Wisconsin. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Jonathan Witt is our guest. We're talking about intelligent design. In about 10 minutes, hour two of the program, we'll start out talking about Islam's intellectual suicide, the history of Islam, its flirtation with Western knowledge and learning, and then its abandonment of that to its detriment and to our danger. Then Dr. Dan Gard will join us to round off today's program. We'll talk about the military's policy of don't ask, don't tell, don't pursue. Dr. Gard serves as a chaplain in the U.S. Naval Reserves, and he's professor of Old Testament and dean of military chaplaincy programs at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Dr. Witt, let's talk a little bit more about this. You said there are two things going on here, not just complexity. There's more than just complexity at work in intelligent design and the way that we look at it.
You have those two things. You have complexity, which would be a highly unlikely pattern, but then specified it meets some pre-existing pattern, and that can be a variety of things. We use the example of an archer. If I went outside and brought some people, and I said, "I am a world-class archer. I make Robin Hood look like a sissy," and I fired an arrow, 100 feet, and then I went on the ground and drew a tiny little circle around it and said, "Hit the bullseye." Wow, what an archer I am. You might want to think about, finding some sort of psychiatric medicine for me. It'd be ridiculous, right? Because the pattern came after the event. I didn't shoot that arrow at a pre-specified pattern. If on the other hand, I hit a bullseye that was already out there from 100 feet away, that was, a one-inch bullseye, people would be duly impressed. That's specified complexity, meeting a pre-existing pattern. It would be, if a monkey sat down and typed out gibberish on a typewriter, that'd be complexity, but it wouldn't be specified complexity. If I sat down and wrote out a letter to you and it made sense, then we have specified complexity. So that's an important distinction we make, and we say the information we have in the biological realm, it's specified complexity. It's information in the sense we normally think of it, because it meets a pre-existing pattern that looks meaningful, and that is it's highly functional. It does things. It allows life forms to exist and reproduce and perform all kinds of amazing functions. Maybe the most famous one is the bacterial flagellum. Michael Behe made it famous. It looks like an outboard motor. It is an outboard motor. It has many of the parts for it. And in a lot of ways, it's more sophisticated than any outboard motor we've ever created.
And I take it that what makes it such a compelling illustration is if you take away one of its parts, you soon discover that that part was essential to the overall functioning of that little structure there.
Yeah, and Behe does a beautiful job of pointing out it's like a mousetrap. A mousetrap, if you take away one of its key parts, isn't a defective but kind of helpful mousetrap. It's just worthless. Same with the bacterial flagellum. You take one of its parts away and it ceases to function. And that's a problem for Darwinism, because they need an evolutionary step-by-step path that allows some primordial precursor to that bacterial flagellum, some very simple version of that machine, to gradually evolve step by step. And each step has to be functional because, nature, Darwin was clear about this, and we didn't need Darwin to know this, nature is pitiless. If there's a dysfunctional cell or animal, it's going to be destroyed by nature. It's not going to grow up and thrive and reproduce and pass on those genes. It's going to be eliminated. And so every step has to be functional, but they can't find anything close to a full pathway to the bacterial flagellum. And so how do you evolve it? One little Darwinian step at a time. Darwin himself ruled out what he called big jump evolution. He said, no, that would involve the miraculous. That would we might as well have a designer if we're going to have, all of a sudden a complex machine pop out of thin air. So to speak. It's got to be a little step at a time, but there are no credible pathways for the bacterial flagellum, and that's just one of many machines in the biological realm that have that problem.
I've noticed...
Of course, that's not a problem for a mind. You don't go into your... If the engineers at Ford want to build an engine, they don't say, oh, if only we can move one tiny step at a time through smaller, simpler functional engines, then we can build a nice engine. They don't have that problem because minds can look ahead, bring different parts together, and assemble something functional because they can see the future, they can think rationally.
I've noticed that advocates of evolutionary theory, either on the grand scale or on the small scale, at least until recently, have spoken, or they've gotten away with speaking as though they're advocates of design. They will talk about biological structures designed to do this. Of course, they're cheating. Do they at least admit that these structures that we see look designed?
Yeah, that's a good question. And in fact, Richard Dawkins, who's probably the most famous Darwinist and professional atheist right now, says biology is the study of structures that give the appearance of having been designed. So they concede that these structures, like the bacterial flagellum and these other amazing machines down in the cell, look designed. But they say, you know what, Darwin and neo-Darwinism gave us a way to explain away that appearance of design. And of course, the intelligent design advocates, what William Dembski and I do in Intelligent Design and Censorship, to say, well, actually, no, they don't. It was a clever idea, but it just doesn't wash.
Two final questions. Critics of intelligent design say that ID is just a thinly veiled religion or bad philosophy. What's your response?
Well, when we take on both of those arguments in the book, in Intelligent Design Uncensored, we spend some time looking at the culture war issues, the philosophical objections. There's even theological objections to this. And we say that, no, it's actually sound, solid philosophy. The philosophical underpinnings are solid, and we make the case that the philosophical underpinnings of the Darwinist, or what we call the methodological materialist, is unsound. A methodological materialist says, you know what, you should only look for material or blind force explanations for things in nature. You shouldn't even consider an intelligent cause as an explanation for, say, the origin of life. Otherwise, you end up just being lazy and you fill the gaps with God. That's the argument. We say, yeah, actually, that's unreasonable, because you're begging the question, what if the origin of life was the result of intelligent design? Your methodology has ruled out even considering that. So it's a question-begging move. So we say the solid philosophy is on our side.
Finally, then, with only about a minute, Dr. Witt, talk, if you would, about Darwinism as dogma, about the academy still being tightly controlled and intellectual freedom being controlled by the Darwinist dogma, with about a minute.
Yeah, my co-author, William Dembski, unfortunately, has experienced some of this directly, and we list some of the more sensational parts of our book are where we describe some of the attacks, some of the attempts to silence intellectual freedom, academic freedom, to silence kind of an open, robust debate about the evidence. And so it's very unfortunate. The silver lining is that new media, the internet, radio shows like yours are helping get the word out, in books, are helping get the word out to young people, older people, that the Darwinist, the philosophical materialist, the so-called new atheist like Richard Dawkins, they don't really have the goods, and that the evidence, in fact, is on our side.
Dr. Jonathan Witt is a research fellow at the Acton Institute in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He's co-author of the new book, Intelligent Design Uncensored, an easy-to-understand guide to the controversy. You can purchase Intelligent Design Uncensored at our website, issuesetc.org. Dr. Witt, thank you for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd. I enjoyed being on.
You know, a regular guest on the program, Dr. Angus Manoj, talks about reading God's world. There's God's Word, that's Holy Scripture, and then there is natural revelation, God's world, which we can also read imperfectly, though. But what do we see? Even blinded by our own sin and rebellion against God, with no real knowledge of God himself, we can see what he has written in the world he has created, and that is that he exists, that he created all these things by his almighty power. Paul tells us in the first couple chapters of Romans, that's all we can know. But we can know that. In fact, I think Paul's case is even stronger. I think Paul says we can't not know that. To deny that God has made all these things is to deny what is written in the world all around us. You can call it evidence of intelligent design, but we always must press past mere intelligent design to talk about that intelligence. At least as Christians, we can say, not by the book of this world, not by reading God's world, but by reading God's word, we not only know who the designer is, we know him. We know him beyond just as creator. For our real problem is our sin and rebellion that separates us from him, although he made us, although we are still his creatures. We must read God's word and find therein how this God, who designed and created all of this, entered into our creation to redeem us, to save us, Jesus Christ himself. When we come back, we'll talk about, we'll be talking about Don't Ask, Don't Tell and Islam's intellectual suicide. Hour two of Issues Etc. in 7 minutes.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.